Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and with me today is Dimitri Lyland.
Hey.
Hey, Dimitri.
You got my last name right. It's a miracle. It's a miracle, guys. Ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I figured there's a new release of Visual Studio. I'm going to turn a new page and start pronouncing your name correctly.
The last episode, my last name was like an RC, and now my last name's like an RTM. Is that what you're saying?
That's an excellent way of putting it. Your name is now released. As has Visual Studio 2013 Update 3. That's correct. It is here. Now, of course, you can go download it. We'll have all the links as we usually do. A few weeks ago, we did a show on Update 3 release candidate. That was the RC.
We were right here.
Yes. And I think you did this slide then, but why don't we go through it again briefly? Tell us how we got to where we are since we shipped 2013.
Yeah, it's been a busy year. I mean, if you look at the slide and all the releases that happened before we even got to the RC, it's been quite a year. We went from update two, update one, update two came out. We had all sorts of tooling releases. We started to release CTPs of the next version of Visual Studio, Dev 14 as we call it. So it's been a very busy time. And then in July, me and you did the episode on RC because it was, hey, RC got there. And since that time, even before this show airs, we had a bunch more releases. I mean, I ran out of space on this slide. I had to use like little font and bullets here because we had another CTP of Dev 14 ship. We had Node.js, our tooling, our official tooling for Node.js for Azure and Visual Studio ship, and we had the Unity acquisition ship as an official Microsoft product.
That was very recently.
Yeah, so super cool. Yep. And today, wow, here we are in August. We have landed at RTM. Update 3.
So between RC and RTM, a few features have been added. And what we thought we'd do, we had choices. We could redo all the demos we just did. We figured that would be kind of boring since we just did them a week ago.
Yeah,
so,
and that episode's available, so people can go watch it.
We figured 500,000 views and counting.
Yeah, it's going.
We figured we could get product team members to come in, but then again, it would have been a lot of the same demos. Or we could have just not done it. So what we wound up deciding is that we would do an overview of everything that's new in Update 3. And that's what your beautiful slides are for.
Yes.
So we'll do some slides very quickly. And then we've got some guests coming on to show us some features that we didn't show in the RC episode, primarily because they didn't exist at the time.
Yeah, pretty much. It's going to be great. I think giving the overview will lay the foundation for everything that's new, so folks, and they'll have all the links, so folks will be able to find
all the details. Not everybody downloaded the RC, so let's just say Update 3 is here. What's new in it?
Yeah. Well, let's go through the whole update. So I want to point out a couple of things. The first thing is today we're not just shipping Update 3. We're shipping Update 3 RTM, of course, we're doing that, but we're also shipping a bunch of what I'm going to call related releases, right? Those related releases are things like the Azure SDK 2.4 is out today, same day, same time. Also the standalone IntelliTrace collector, something that people have requested. We've brought that back. That hasn't shipped since 2012. Also, Windows Phone 8.1 update is shipping, which means that the developers can get the updated emulators and SDK as a standalone download as well. So quite a few things today. We're also shipping one other preview release. So the multi-device hybrid apps are tooling for Cordova, the preview that we've had CTP 1 shipped and CTP 1.1 since TechEd. We're shipping CTP 2, which actually is quite a bit more stable release, a lot of features added. So it's a great kind of day. And I thought we'd go through kind of the value categories for people. And this is what this slide is all about. So let's take a look. So the first thing that I want to point out about the slide is that it's color-coded. If something is purple, it ships inside of Update 3. If something is the blue, you have to download some other bits to get it. I just want to make sure people understand that. So the first thing is application lifecycle management. If you install Update 3, not just into Visual Studio, but in TFS, you can get all these features. Some are Visual Studio side, some are TFS side, some are both. So CodeLens, for example, has Git support. You demoed that last time in our RC episode. That's on the client side. We have release management. So if you use release management 2013, which is our release management product in Visual Studio, if you install Update 3 into it, you get certain features from there. You have test case management from TFS side. So if you have on-premises TFS 2013, install Update 3, you'll get those features. And application insights capabilities are now in the box, the tooling with update 3. So that's the first category of features. Then we have debugging and diagnostics, various things. I'm not going to go through every one, but basically we're going to go through in slides and talk about these categories of, you know, debugging for graphics, debugging for CPU memory code map, for some architectural things, and debugging as well. And talk about the IntelliTrace collector that's out there as well. So lots of kind of debugging profiling capabilities. We also have Azure and ASP.NET tooling. We have Azure tooling that's in the box with update 3, so some things we'll point out what those are. And then we have ASP.NET web tooling, which is in the box. So not Azure specific, but certainly works in Azure, works in on-premises IIS, and we have a tooling and platform changes there as well. And then we have the Azure SDK 2.4. You install that as a standalone, you get all those capabilities. Next, you're going to get the mobile app development scenario. So you have some changes for Windows Store app developers. We'll talk about those in a bit. And then in standalone, we have the emulated tools for update for the update for 8.1 Windows Phone and the multi-device hybrid apps CTP2. Mm-hmm. And of course, finally, there are a bunch of other smaller changes. We're not going to go through every one of them. And there's some bug fixes. There's always bug fixes as well in these updates. So that's kind of 10,000 feet, and we'll jump into the details and run through it nice and quick.
So let's do a fairly brief bit of a dive into these. Enhancements to CodeLens, we showed this in the RC episode. The primary one is the support for Git. So you check your code into Git, you get the CodeLens features that tell you what changes were made, who made the changes in, you know, did the tests work, et cetera.
Yeah, the work items specifically, work items. So there's three indicators that work right out
of the box. So up until this point, that's worked if you're using TFS or Visual Studio Online. Now it works if you're using Git. So that's cool. We've added some enhancements for doing test plans with Test Manager. We got some feedback that people wanted some ability to customize their test plans. So you have the ability to not just stick with the state of being active or inactive. You can customize the default states and add your own as it makes sense. You can add some user fields on your own, some custom fields of your own. A little bit more customization to use kind of the terminology that you're used to using. And then these enhanced security features to
just give you more granular control over how people can interact with your tests. I mean, that's really what that's there for.
Right. Okay. For release management, we now give you the ability to use PowerShell scripts instead of having to use the whole Microsoft deployment agent and use this desired state configuration. So it just makes it easier and gives you additional choices for how you do release management. We haven't really covered release management on this show. We are going to be taping a show on release management that will air in about 4 to 6 weeks or so. So just be aware for you guys that don't really haven't really seen it or don't really understand it, we are doing an entire episode on it.
Yeah, and release management is cool. I mean, it's one of those companies we acquired fairly recently in our history, and we've done a lot to integrate it. It is a separate executable, but it's part of your MSDN subscription, mm-hmm. most likely. So definitely take a look in DSC. A lot of people are excited about that.
And then some application insights tooling. Prior to update 3, you were able to get an extension from the Visual Studio Gallery, which gave you the ability to add application insights to your projects at the time you created them and also after the fact. But you had to download that extension. Now that extension ships in the box. And also, we're showing you a preview of what application insights will look at like on the new Azure portal.
Yeah, the Ibiza portal.
Yep. So. And I think we also want to do a show on application insights. We've kind of touched on it, but I really want to do a show, and I'll probably have Chuck Sterling come on and do that. That just basically starts from scratch and says, what are the types of things you can do with it?
Yeah, application insights. People ask even in the comments from the RC show, like, oh, I wish you guys spend more time. I will say to those folks, you don't have to wait. You can go take a look at TechEd and Build. I'm pretty sure that both we did sessions on it. But it'd be great to have another kind of start to this conversation, and you'll have an episode about it. So that's pretty cool. So next, we'll talk about next kind of category of functionality. So graphics diagnostics, the team has done really some great work to make it even easier for folks to have an application, which is a DirectX C++ application for the most part, whether that's a desktop app or, you know, a game or an app or a store app, a Windows Store, Windows Phone. In the last update, they added that support, right? So every update builds on itself, right? So now you have this tooling that they're working on that works across all these platforms to let you take the graphics of an application, debug it down to, you know, why am I having performance problems? Where's my frame rate dropping? What code was executing at the time? So all these profiling tools, and they're calling it like the Visual Studio Graphics Analyzer. It's a new window, it's a new set of sort of bringing the experiences that they've been building up kind of together and also adding new functionality to it. And we'll have Rong on later
in the show. Yeah, we have a demo on that coming
up. Yeah, she'll do a great job to actually go into details. I really love this tool. Next, we have some changes to the memory dump debugging capabilities. So Visual Studio has the ability to take a dump file created by Windows, a third-party tool, anything it creates that standard file. So if you can actually do debugging against it, especially if it's a .NET app, you get really rich debugging against it in Visual Studio. In this release, they added go to reference, find all references and go to definition capability,
which we showed in the RC show, along with the application insights, by the way.
Yeah. So we've shown some of these. Definitely take a look. And I think this is pretty cool because it really is often the question, right? Great, I found something that's the source of my memory leak. Where is it in my code? You know, this just makes it easier, less digging, more kind of going to the issue. We also have a performance and diagnostic hub in Visual Studio. And this hub has a bunch of capabilities. One of them is memory usage analysis. Another one is CPU usage analysis. So these tools get features in this release. So memory usage, I really like this one. It adds WPF support, Win32 support. Before, this memory usage tool only worked for store apps. So now you get this tool for your desktop applications as well. They've also added a bunch of just features, you know, like the Force GC, we showed this, right, in the last episode, the RC one, where, you know, hey, is my memory going up? And is garbage collection the thing is going to save me? Well, now you can press a button instead of hotwiring some code in there to do that. CPU usage adds a, you know, go to source basically from the call tree, which is, again, just minimizing how much work you have to do to go from, I found something in my analysis, I want to go deeper in the code, my project's open, it does the correlation for you and lets you go right to the code. So that's pretty cool. We did demos of that last time. Next, I want to point out, this is, again, kind of a separate download. You've got to go get it yourself. But if you do need, as a customer, the ability to collect IntelliTrace data in your production environment, the standalone collector can do that. IntelliTrace, you know, folks don't know, is this really rich ability to debug the call stack and memory of an application. There's all sorts of uses for it, definitely. Take a look at that collector if you need it.
We did a show on this a while ago with Larry Gruger, and he showed that in production you can gather this IntelliTrace information to see what's going on. Prior to the standalone collector, you essentially had to install Visual Studio on your production server and run it, or on your test server. Not exactly something people wanted to do, so they invented this standalone collector. You just run those bits, not all of Visual Studio, and it does the same thing, collecting that data. And then when you get the IntelliTrace files, you can actually open those in Visual Studio and see what's going on.
Yeah, that's correct. So. And we had shipped it in 2012, but we didn't ship it in 2013. We've caught up, you know, and I'm glad that it's available again under sort of the right version of Visual Studio. I think it's all about just making sure people feel comfortable with it. Right. I think it still worked even from previous versions. And also, Application Insights has one IntelliTrace feature that was kind of related and added here, where you can skip straight to a detail of a single performance event. So if you're using Application Insights to collect IntelliTrace performance events, this is a new capability. You should take a look at it if that's something that interests you. And one last thing in this category of capability is the code map. I actually didn't know where to put it in my slides. I was like, oh, maybe I'll make an architecture section, because you can use code maps to do analysis and application from like an architectural standpoint, see how all the classes connect and talk to each other. So it really is cool diagramming, really is real time. But really, you could also use it for debugging. So I thought, let's talk about it here. So one of the things they added in code map is the ability to just read the code map easier. Before, the code map, which you can see kind of in my screenshot here, had a bunch of different arrows going between the boxes, you know, the classes and the calls, but they weren't color-coded. So it was really hard to tell what was what. You had to kind of click on it or highlight it, get the tooltips, or just naturally know what that could have been. So now there's a legend and there's a color coding, so that's really great. And also in the debugging scenario, there was one complaint from customers, very valid. I've hit this myself, where the zoom level wouldn't save. So if you were trying to understand the call stack as a code map, which is one of the capabilities, and you would go between sessions, the zoom level wouldn't remember itself. So if you're like, oh, I really want to just look here, you know, every time you have to go back in. It was kind of annoying, so I'm glad they fixed it. And one completely kind of new feature is this notion that you might have a third-party library or your own library for all we care, a library of some kind, .NET, and you want to drag it in and you want to investigate it. So that wasn't possible before. I mean, Visual Studio didn't know what to do with it. Now you open a code map, you drag an assembly from the solution, from the file explorer into it, it will open it up as a code map if you can read it. So that's a pretty cool feature.
Cool. Bunch of new Azure tooling. This should be no surprise. That team is constantly working on new tooling to make working with Azure easier. And one of the things is the ability to very easily create push notifications from inside Visual Studio, which gives you a high-powered way of sending out notifications to multiple devices. Merwan Hadeh is going to come on a little bit later in the show and show that.
Yeah, he'll do justice, I'm sure. He knows the stuff in and out.
And then we also, next week's episode is Merwan showing he does .NET mobile services, but also dives into the push notification. So he'll do a little bit of a preview of it today, and then on next week's episode, he'll dive into it. Then we also have tooling for Azure Web Jobs. Web Jobs is a feature that's in Azure, is in the SDK. Brady Gaster just did an episode on webcams where he dove into it in detail. He's going to come on and show us the specific tooling inside Visual Studio. And basically, a web job is a very easy way to create a background task to do something like maintenance or, you know,
Process files,
or whatever.
Anything you want. Any .NET code you want to write.
They're really easy to create, and the tooling makes them even easier.
Yeah, and the one thing I want to point out is both of these capabilities are inside of Update 3, right? You don't have to get the SDK, but as we keep saying, get the SDK 2.4, you might as well.
Yes. And when you create an Azure mobile service, you now have the ability to decide at the time you create it that you're going to be publishing it to a particular Azure website. That's now in the new project dialog. And of course, the tooling support for the .NET mobile services. Again, next week's episode, Merwan's going to dive into that in great detail.
Yeah, one of the nice features here that we've added is just the push notification, right? The fact that it now supports it. Before, it used to be a separate thing, and now you can have a mobile service and say, I want it to push. I want to be the thing that's pushing.
Well, the cool thing about the tooling is when you create a website that you want to be an Azure website, or you create a mobile service that you create a .NET mobile service, you're eventually going to have to publish it. Used to be that you'd create it and then you'd go into the publish wizard and download your configuration and whatnot, and it kind of felt like an extra step. Now you
multiple
can decide,
extra steps.
Yeah, now you can decide to do that right at the very beginning, right? You're creating a mobile service. It's an Azure mobile service. You're going to be hosting it in Azure somewhere. Yeah. So why not just do all of that work for you at the time you create the project? Same thing with a website. You might host the website on IIS, but you very likely might want to decide that you want to host it on a virtual machine or an Azure website.
Yes.
So give you that choice up front, and then we bring down all the configuration stuff. So when it's time to publish, it's just a lot easier. It now feels a little bit more like something that's part of the process instead of just, let's go run a wizard.
Yeah, for sure. And it's building, every update builds on top of itself. Yeah. Update 2 brought the websites here. This one brings mobile services.
Makes it easier.
Yeah, for sure. And also, we've also shipped the Azure SDK. So some of the capabilities in the Azure SDK, as opposed to the ones we just talked about that's inside of Update 3, if you install SDK 2.4, you're going to get a bunch of capabilities. And, Morwan's going to talk about some of these as well later on. So just quickly, my favorite feature, and he'll show this, the ability to take snapshots of virtual machines, right, from Visual Studio and do some configuration. That's really awesome. There's some debugging stuff that's there, and also the ability to view storage logs, which I also really love. There's this notion that you might want to understand what's happening with your storage, who's accessing it, what file states are. You can get all of that from Visual Studio. It's, once again, sort of bringing everything into VS from a dev test perspective, and you're just more productive as a developer, just getting through your day, making sure that Azure is not some complex thing you got to go out and manage from the web portal or something. It's all in Visual Studio. They've also added a bunch of tooling for ASP.NET developers. So the ASP.NET team and the web tooling team is one group with Microsoft, and they've been working not super huge features here, but some good ones, definitely building on top of previous releases. So JSON editor shipped last release. In this release, they've added auto formatting. You can turn it off if you don't like it. They've added some brace matching options. CSS editor, some minor features. I really do like this one where you know, sometimes you want to generate a font CSS markup or something for another CSS file to be referenced, you can just actually drag it from Solution Explorer into your CSS. It will generate the tag, generate the URI. It just makes it easier. How many times, I mean, I've done this a million times, actually. I've dragged files in hoping it would do that, and instead I get the full file path on disk, and I'm like, that's not what I wanted, right? I wanted the URI at least. This makes it kind of cool and easier. So those folks are working on it. They've also added a bunch of things to templates. So if you go file a new project, you use a template that we provide to you. If you install update 3, first of all, some things will get updated as NuGet packages evolve and we publish new ones. Those will get updated, but they've added some interesting things like two-factor authentication support, Azure Active Directory support right in there. The one thing they did remove is the Facebook template, but not to kill it, but actually just to make it update quicker. As Facebook changes things, we want to be able to change things so it actually works. So now it's a NuGet package, so that's pretty cool. So next we've got Windows Store. Windows Store has a few capabilities, and again, nothing sort of mind-shattering here, but it's certainly one feature I really appreciate as a Windows Store developer. I love building apps, even though I'm not shipping as many as I'd like, and that's debugging. How many times have I done this? I've hit F5, I have two monitors or three monitors, depending where I am physically in the world. I have kind of a couple of setups out there, and I put the Store app full screen in one of them, and then I do some debugging against it, and I stop, then I start the session again, and again, puts it right on top of Visual Studio. It assumes it's always in the same monitor. Now it's going to remember between sessions which monitor the app was on. It sounds like a small thing, but developers out there are doing this. They're clapping if they're Windows Store developers. Also, one thing that we've allowed for Windows Phone apps in the store for the certification process is using WinSec APIs if you are a developer and you need to do that. Now we're actually changing the certification process and the local WAC kit that sort of makes sure your app is good before you upload to the store to allow that for Windows Store apps. So phone and store apps have the capability, which is great, but also think from a code sharing perspective. Now you can write that code once and not have to worry. It won't pass certification. This is really exciting. There's a lot of hype around this, so I'm not going to go into all the details. You can read it elsewhere, but an update has shipped for Windows Phone 8.1. So even though Windows Phone 8.1 hasn't rolled out to everybody yet, certainly it is rolling out on certain devices and such, but now even an update has been released. And look, this is our commitment as a company to say we want to get solutions out to our customers faster. All right, and next, we have multi-device hybrid apps. So multi-device hybrid apps is a preview release, so this is not something that's RTM. It's a standalone installer, so you're not going to get it just because you got update 3. Just like all the other two things we just talked about, right? These are all standalones. The Azure SDK, the emulators for update 1 for Windows Phone 8.1. So this is another one of those standalone releases. But it's cool because if you want to build apps that you write once and they run across different platforms, Android, iOS, Windows, you can do it with Cordova tooling. And what we did is we created Visual Studio tooling Cordova platform, right? And we have tooling that allows you to build those.
So this is the cross-platform capability for the folks doing HTML. Right? If you're doing XAML and C#, then you're going to take a look at Xamarin.
Yes, for sure.
What if you're not doing XAML and C#? What if you're an HTML developer and you want to write cross-platform apps and you want to do it inside Visual Studio? So
in fact, we should do a show on this because
show on this.
Are we?
Yes, we are.
Oops.
It'll be in about 3 weeks, I think, 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, that makes
Ryan
a lot of sense.
Silva's coming in. We're going to devote an entire show to this.
Awesome. So the one thing I will say is that I won't, in this context, have enough time to explain. Is it Xamarin? Is it a universal app? Is it Cordova tooling? Like, what should I do? Right. That's an episode. But what I will say is, this is one way you can build cross-platform apps. It's a cool way. It certainly lets you write it once.
You should answer the question, what do you develop in?
Yes.
If you're a C# XAML developer, you should look at Xamarin. If you are an HTML developer, you should look at this.
Yeah, and there's also goals, right? Some people just want to create a quick and dirty business application that they write once. This might be better for you. So there's scenarios, there's skill sets, all sorts of things that apply. But if you haven't taken a look at this and you're serious about cross-platform development, that's a mistake. You really should know your options. And we provide great tooling, and this is CTP2. The one thing to note is, once you install update 3 on your machine, if you had the previous CTPs, they just won't work. We've had to upgrade things. So you have to install CTP2 that's been released today along with update 3, or not install update 3 if you want to use the older version. I don't know why you would. We've stabilized it. We've added more capability. We've added a really cool compatibility checker because there's a lot of dependencies to do this stuff. That's Cordova thing. It's not our thing. But we now make sure the right versions of the right SDKs are installed. So lots of great capabilities. I'm glad you're doing a show. And we'll maybe do like a cross-platform show higher up kind of architecturally at some point. That'd be kind of cool.
Sure.
All right, and one of the other things that you know that we haven't talked about is a lot of these little small things. One thing I'll point out is we finally added an option to disable the all caps menus that people have wanted. Hooray for us! You know,
yes.
we finally done that. So there's things like that. You know, smaller things. Go look at the release notes. Today we published the release notes that have all these details. Go to visualstudio.com, click on news, and you'll see an RTM thing in there. I work very hard in these, so please send us feedback if something isn't right in the release notes. We're really trying to create one place where you can find everything, including the related releases. So that's the one place to take a look. And of course, there are bug fixes in this release. And those bug fixes are in the KB. That's where they are. So if you're looking for features, look at the release notes. If you're looking for bug fixes, look at the KB. If you go to the release notes, you find everything. You'll find this video. That's maybe how you found us. Maybe you're watching us thanks to that. So it's all connected. We're trying to create a great story. Of course, your feedback is very much welcome.
Right.
And that's
we'll post this slide deck
yes.
just like we did last time so that folks can have this. And so first part of the show is done. We've done a high-level overview of what's in it. It's time to actually now fire up the product and actually look at some of these features. Again, we're just going to cover the things that have been added since the RC.
Yeah, things we didn't show, things have been added.
We did that show and did a bunch of demos on that. So we've got Merwan Hade coming on to show us Azure tooling, and then we've got Rong Lu coming on to show us the graphics diagnoses stuff in C++. And then we'll finish with Brady Gaster, who's going to come on and show us the web jobs tooling.
And I have a feeling they're all going to do great. I don't know how I know this, but I know they're all going to do great.
Of course they are. That's a testable hypothesis, so let's go test that.
All right, let's do it.
And joining me today is Merwan Hade. Hey, Merwan.
Hey, Robert. How's it going?
Welcome back onto the show.
Thank you very much. Our focus has been on making it easier for developers to write applications against Azure and then go into Visual Studio, specifically into the Server Explorer, and interact with those Azure resources. So do things like if you have virtual machines, to take snapshots of your virtual machines, mm-hmm. or if you need to add endpoints or add extensions. For notification hubs, we've made it easier to debug your hubs so you can send test notifications. You can also view what registrations have subscribed to your notification hub. We've also beefed up our Azure storage tooling. So we had feedback from customers saying, hey, it's great that I can see what's in my Azure storage containers and my tables and my mm-hmm. queues, but I'd love to get some idea of what are the different logs for my Azure storage? Like, what are all the read-write requests that have come in? Or also, what are my metrics for storage? How are my users using my storage containers and my my tables, my blobs, and my queues. So we've beefed up that.
Cool.
And lastly, we've also added support for Azure Web Jobs in Visual Studio. So we'll get to take a peek into that as well. So let me start off. I'm in the Server Explorer. To open up the Server Explorer, obviously, you just go to View, Server Explorer. The first thing I want to show you is our virtual machines tooling. So in a previous iteration, we allowed you to create virtual machines. And once they were created, we allowed you to start and shut down, restart, and also connect using remote desktop. What we've done now is given you the ability to configure your virtual machine.
Nice.
And so
you can. So this is just another instance of a thing you don't have to go out to the portal to do.
Exactly.
You can do this from inside Visual Studio.
Exactly. And the big deal about virtual machines is really it's meant to be it's really geared towards the dev test scenarios. You develop your application, you're ready to deploy it, you deploy it into a test environment
right.
where you can try it out. And Visual Studio is naturally the tool where you develop your applications. We want it to also be the tool where you can deploy your applications from and also do debugging if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at the virtual machine configuration window. As you can see at the top, you have the ability to shut down. You can also connect to it. A cool thing that we've added is the ability to capture snapshots. Now, the idea behind snapshots is, suppose your machine is in a good state. Let's say you've just newly deployed it.
Wish my machine spent time in a good state.
For about 5 minutes, right, before you install that beta SDK.
At night, after I turn it off, before I come in the morning.
Exactly.
But I digress.
Right. So you're worried, hey, is my virtual machine in a good state or not? What you can do is capture that state, and you can spin up a new virtual machine based on that. So it could be once it's newly deployed and you have the extensions and the endpoints that you want. It could also be if you've run into a particular error state and you want to hand it off to another developer on your team and be like, hey, go debug this. This is the state that I ran into last night.
This is big because being able to take snapshots is just such a convenience. It's one of the main reasons people, you know, love Hyper-V and kind of dev tests. The Brian Keller VM, right? How many of us have that sort of situation where we take a snapshot, we do a bunch of stuff with some test environment. This is great. I mean, I think this is probably my hottest feature for that one in the virtual machines from a dev test perspective. So it's cool that the tooling's there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and capture a snapshot. It asked me for two things, an image label, just so that I can refer to it later, and also a description, just a friendly way to say, hey, these were the changes that I made. I'm just going to keep the defaults and hit capture. And that snapshot is created. A few other things that I want to point out here. You can also modify your public endpoints. For example, if you want to add the PowerShell endpoint, you can go in and add that. If you need to remove it, you can remove it. Same thing for things like remote desktop and web deploy.
So this is just about opening ports.
Exactly, right. Sure. And you can also add and remove extensions. So for example, the remote debugger, that's a really popular one. Mm-hmm. If you have a web application that you deploy to your virtual machine, you can add remote debugging to it. So once that extension is added from within VS, so if I did right-click and I did attach debugger, enable debugging and attach debugger, that extension would get added and I can see it here.
Cool. I guess you would want to disable it for like security reasons.
Exactly.
You said, oh, I'm not sure if this is configured properly, you just want to disable it for now.
Exactly. Cool. Quick thing to point out, once that virtual machine is ready, once that snapshot is ready, you can spin up a new VM. You go to the Create New Virtual Machine dialog, and I brought that up by right-clicking on the virtual machine node and clicking Create VM. And if you go under Private Images, VM Images, you'll see a list of snapshots with the description that we created before. Great, so the next thing I wanted to show you was our tooling for Azure Storage. So we previously gave you the ability to view the contents of your blob containers, to view the contents of your queues and your tables, and also to add in new things. So you could upload files, you could add in new queue messages, and you could add and delete table entities as well. Mm-hmm. What we've added now is the ability to view logs for your storage containers and tables and queues. Now, the idea behind logs is it allows you to get a sense of what are all the read, write, and delete requests that I've had for one of my storage entities. Similarly, we also have metrics. So if you expand the tables node, you'll find this new node called the metrics tables. And if you expand that, you'll get a variety of different tables for things like your blob capacity, how many transactions you've had for your blobs, your queues, and tables. And you can get a sense of what are the total number of requests, how many were successful, how many were failures, the amount of time taken, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Another cool thing that we've added is our tooling for notification hubs.
Yeah, and this is the example where you get this functionality just by installing update 3, right? You don't need to worry about the SDK, but install the SDK, right? Make your life easier. You don't have to hunt where the feature is, and it's all available today, so it makes sense.
Yep. So I already have a notification hub provision. Now, the great thing about notification hubs is that it allows you to send cross-platform, really high-volume messages at a very low latency. Mm-hmm. So you can send notifications to a variety of devices, be it Windows Phone, Windows Store, iOS, Android, or even Kindle Fire devices. And you can send it really from any back-end technology. So it comes for free with mobile service, and there's a lot of built-in support, but you can also use it from a cloud service, or if you have a virtual machine, you can use it from there as well. Now, what we've done in Visual Studio is we've made it easy for you to send out test notifications to a variety of devices, and also to view who subscribed for notifications. So this was something we released in our previous version, the test send feature. I'll show it really quickly. So I can come in here, I can choose what kind of message I want to send, and what sort of template I want to use. Is it a Windows message? Is it a Windows Phone, an iOS, or Android? Go with Windows Phone, or I'll go with Windows. Um,
And then it works. So there you go. They love you.
So that's something we shipped in a previous release. What we're shipping now is the ability to view, to browse your device registrations. So what does that mean? By device registration, so every device that signs up for a notification gets added in the in a table of registrations. And you can get a sense of what are all the Windows devices that are signed up, what are all the iOS and Android, et cetera. So you can you get a sense of all the devices here. You get a count by platform. So if your app really takes off, you can come in here and quickly get a sense of, oh, how many devices, you know, how many Amazon users do I have? How many Windows Phone users do I have?
So it's platform, not version of the operating system?
It's platform.
Okay.
Yep. So yeah, you could be on, you know, iOS, one version of iOS, or you could be on the multitude of Android versions.
And does all Windows include 7 and 8 and things prior?
Well, so 8? This is just Windows 8 and 8.1.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
And what you can do here, in addition to viewing your registrations, you can also edit tags. Now, the idea behind tags is think of them as interest groups. So let's say you have a breaking news application. You don't want to blast everyone with notifications. You want to send it out to a select group of people, right? People that sign up for updates to business or science or technology, et cetera. And that's where tags comes in. So each interest group is classified under a tag. Mm-hmm. And what we do here is you can quickly go in and modify that a tag that a subscription or that a registration is subscribed to. So in this case, I have dev test. I can change that and make it just dev.
Is it also possible to use tags for something like localization purposes? Could
Absolutely.
You tag for languages?
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know that's a big one. People always say, how do we, in this global world, right, send notifications only to people that can understand the language we're using. So this could be very, very good for that.
Right. And we think of this tooling really as something that goes hand in hand, because you could imagine I just changed a tag. I could go over to the test send feature and then send to a particular tag. And really the idea is as you develop your application, you don't necessarily want to be dependent on your server side implementation. Like let's say you set up your client, you've subscribed to notifications, the server is still being developed. You can quickly just come in and see what your test notifications look like. And you can see if your device registration is working. You're not tied to the server implementation per se.
Cool.
And we've also added support for web jobs. So now you can create a console project and you can publish it to an Azure website as a Azure web job. We also allow you to do things like determine a schedule, whether you want to run it on demand, or you know what you want to name your web job. Really, we set up that pipeline for pushing out your web jobs to Azure websites.
Okay, we're going to have Brady Gaster on in a little bit to talk more about web jobs, so we're going to let him go into detail on that.
Yeah, he's really the expert on that. He spent a ton of time, so.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good. So, well, maybe we should have you do it too, and then we can compare.
I'm just kidding. Guest versus guest.
All right, so that's awesome. Great features coming available now in Update 3. So well,
and the Azure SDK,
of course, you got to get them both. We're gonna do an episode. It's actually the next episode of this show on .NET Mobile Services, where we also talk a little bit more about the Notification Hub. But this was a good overview.
Yeah.
So where can people learn more about these updates today?
Yeah. So we're gonna have a blog post. So do search for that. It's gonna be on both the Azure SDK 2.4 as well as the tooling for Visual Studio 2013 Update 3.
Awesome. We'll link to that in the show notes.
Definitely.
Yeah, and do check it out. Like I said, you can always go to azure.microsoft.com and download the latest SDK from there.
Great. Cool. All right. Thanks, Marwan.
Thank you very much.
Our next guest is Rong Liu. Hi, Rong.
Hi, Robert.
Rong's on the C++ team and is here to show us some C++. Goodness, we don't actually do enough C++ on this show.
We don't do enough C++ in general. We need to show more on
Channel 9. Yeah, we should do more.
Yes. So welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me here.
To talk about what's new in C++ in Update 3.
Right. So one of the things we've been working on in Update 3 that just shipped today is the graphics diagnostics tools. There have been a lot of improvements in that release. In general, this tool is designed to help you diagnosing your rendering issues or performance issues in your DirectX graphics applications. Just think of it as a debugger and a profiler for graphics.
Cool.
So whether you're doing a 3D game or you're just doing an app using DirectX, you will be happy to have such a tool to help you diagnosing issues.
Does it work for like any kind of app? So if it's C++ and DirectX, even for like a store apps, it works or desktop apps?
Oh yeah,
apps, it doesn't
absolutely. Okay. So we support desktop apps, store apps, as well as phone apps actually. Mm-hmm. So that's new. Also new in update 2, the phone support we added. So in general, like if you have an issue with your app rendering wrong colors, or you're rendering a car but it's not showing up on your screen, you'll be like, oh, what was going on in my app? What has happened in that frame? I would like to know what exactly happened. So this is when this tool can be really helpful to help you understand what exactly happened during that frame.
Cool.
So a while back when we shipped update 3 RC a couple of weeks ago, I had
seems
this.
Seems like yesterday.
Yeah. I had this blog post that introduced all these new additions we have added in this release. So it has a lot more details.
Okay.
In that screenshot, so it'd be a good place to read out. And I'm happy here to today to show you some of those things in a live demo, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
So let's go back to Visual Studio. So what I have here is a Marble Maze app, actually a game. So this is a DirectX applications. And Marble Maze is a sample that was shipped online. So everybody can download that if you want to play with it. So basically, this is a simple game, assuming we are having an issue with rendering. So what you would do is you launch this app with graphics diagnostics option. I want to zoom in a little bit so you can see that. So the option is down in debug graphics and then start diagnostics. So once you launch that, the app will launch. So this is a store app. The only difference you will see is on the left corner, top left corner, there is a text that says your frame count, frame captured. So that means our graphics debugger has been attached to your app. Now you can start playing with the game.
So XAML apps have a similar thing. Is it kind of the same engine underneath, or is this entirely different?
So XAML underneath, under the cover, it's all rendering using DirectX.
Okay.
But as an app developer, you may not be calling DirectX APIs directly by yourself.
Right.
So in a lot of cases, this could still be a useful tool to XAML developers if you want to really understand what's going on under the cover.
Okay.
But if you're directly coding against DirectX APIs, this would make even more sense to look at. So we have this app running right now. What I can do here is let me go back and introduce the feature in Visual Studio for you. So this is actually a brand new UI that we are looking at. This is brand new in update 3, looking at the swim lanes we have here that shows you the frame rate, frame time, and frame rate of your application. So you can actually watch this going live as your app is running.
Yeah, that's very cool. You
cool.
can see exactly what's happening. It's a similar UI to like the UI response in
Analyzer
for HTML. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, exactly. This is the same experience as all the other performance tools.
Yeah.
The other thing you might notice is that we have this huge capture frame button in front of us. And this is also new, and this is an improvement based on the feedback we have heard from users that sometimes it was hard to find that
certainly
tiny button.
Certainly not hard to find now.
Yeah, certainly. So that is the goal. So now we have this big button here. You can capture frames anytime you want. Let me press that and go back to the app. Because this is a store app, it's taking up the full screen. So I need to go switch to here to let it render a few frames. Now if we go back to VS, we see that a frame has been captured. Mm-hmm. Here we show you a screenshot, but we absolutely capture more than just a screenshot. So I'll show you that in a minute.
And you're showing in the timeline when it was captured,
right.
The red indicator.
Right, okay. And the frame number. Other things, just quickly mention that this is new in update 2 actually. So we have the ability to capture multiple frames if you want.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you see a glitch in your app and it might be really, really hard to precisely capture that single frame. So you can say, on my next capture, I want to capture 30 frames. And hopefully that will catch the glitch that you have in the app. Mm. So now we have this, got this frame we wanted, and I can stop debugging. Visual Studio is going to save all those information. And now I'm ready to look at, OK, what exactly is in that frame? So I can click on the link to open that frame, which will bring up another window. So this is completely new in Update 3. So one of the feedback we have heard in the past from our customers is it takes a lot of efforts to manage those various tool windows for graphics. Mm-hmm. So if you look at all the tool windows we have here, we got event list, call stack, pipeline state, pixel history. We have 5, 6 different tool windows that you need to use when you're analyzing the frame. And in the past, all those windows live inside the VS IDE, which could be a little bit challenging to manage, given that you already have other tool windows in VS you might be using for the tasks.
Yeah, it gets very cluttered. You
know, right.
We've all faced that kind of problem.
Right. So the idea is now we are separating all those graphics-related components into a separate window. It just happens, looks like a VS IDE. This is actually a customized VS IDE.
Right.
But just think of it as a big window that carries a bunch of tool windows. You also notice we got a different name for that, so you don't confuse that with VS. So it's called Visual Studio Graphics Analyzer.
Mm-hmm.
It's very specially designed for analyzing your graphics frames. We also got a different icon if you you don't want to confuse with VS. Other things you could do with this IDE, you'll notice that we have very few menu items and toolbars compared with regular VS. This is because we only contain the components that we need for this task.
This is a particular scope, right?
This isn't an IDE.
This is just a window with
a big
certain
window
scope and certain features.
For this feature.
Sure.
And then you can actually change to a different color if you prefer.
So
that way you can
designer,
definitely
you can
separate this from your VS environment.
The good old black. Everybody loves,
right.
loves the black.
So now I'm in this big window. I'm ready to analyze my frames. So we actually, like I said, we capture more than just a screenshot. So if you look at on the left side, we have this event list. Basically, this is a list of API calls you made during that frame. So you can look at that list and walk through that to see exactly which job call do what on your screen. So if you walk through that, you'll see here we have got the maze, and then we have got this ball draw by this draw call, and then of course move on this particular draw call to the text of the time, so you will understand which draw call is responsible for drawing what. And also sometimes you might have a rendering issue on a particular pixel, not screen wise, but particular pixel. So you can go ahead and click on any of the pixels on the screen. Then you'll be able to look at the history of this pixel, how the colors have changed, what are the vertices that involved. And you can also look at your shader code directly from here. And you can actually start debugging from here. So all this can be done within this big window.
Yeah.
Now we are in the debugging mode, just like any regular debugging. You are now debugging shader code. And as you would expect, we have locals window, watch window, call stack, immediate window. So all the windows you usually would use during debugging.
So it's building out the context of this versus the previous, the report view, where it gives you certain information. Now you have the debug view is giving you the other relevant windows right away. But you can still hide them or
change
their
absolutely.
Position. That's still available.
So these windows will only show up when you are doing shader debugging.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can do a step over the shader. Shader code and all that. And I want to introduce to you one more new thing that's completely new in Update 3, which is a feature we called Shader Edit and Apply. So the idea being, OK, now I've got this frame. And I wonder if I can play with it, like if I can apply a different color or try a different vertex positions, how would my app look like? So traditionally, what you will have to do is you go and modify your code, and you recompile and rerun your app and see what it looks like. So now with this feature, you don't have to go through all that loop. You can actually just go straight making changes in here. So let's assume I'm going to pass in a little bit more red color to this shader. Now I wonder how my app would look like.
Right.
All I need to do is go and click this button called Apply. And what this will do is it will go refresh all of my windows that's relevant. So for example, if we go back to the original frame, all the redness has been applied. You'll be like, oh, okay, this is not the color I want. So you can go back and tweak the color.
This could be like your
health. Maybe
as
you
well.
Want that.
Yeah, you know, some kind of visual cue there.
Yeah.
That's very cool. It saves you time, right? That's the
biggest
thing.
Right. So you can do a lot more iterations inside this window. You don't have to leave this place. So this is the shader edit and apply feature that's new in update 3.
Very cool.
There's one more thing I want to mention. We also collect call stacks when we did the frame capture. So if you find a draw call that you're interested in, you're like, oh, okay, I know this is a draw call. I'm not passing the right parameters, and I want to fix it. How do I go back to my code and fix that? Because right now I am in this analyzer environment. So we collect all the call stacks, and you can look at where is your code. And you can double click. We will go back and to the VS where your project is open and find that source code for you and highlight where you made that draw call. So you can quickly go back to your source code as well.
Nice. So the call stack works the way you expected. And that integration is there. Just because you're in another window doesn't mean you're disconnected from source code.
Right. If you have the project open, we will go back and open that for you.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Can you attach this to an app that's running without having the source code open in Visual Studio?
So you can open an XE directly in VS. Just open XE as a project. And then you can launch the debugger the same way I showed you before. Mm-hmm. We don't allow you to attach to a running process, though, which will hopefully come later. So just a quick demo of what we have added in update 3. There are more details in that blog post I showed.
And we'll link to
so
that.
Welcome to read that.
Awesome.
Right. Yeah,
thanks so much.
Thank you
for coming.
Our third and final guest is Brady Gaster. Hey, Brady. And you're here to talk to us about Azure Web Jobs.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Web Jobs, specifically the tooling that we have coming out and the RTM release.
Now, you're on WebCamps TV like a week or so ago. You did like a 40-minute episode on it. So for all the gory details, people should go watch that.
Yeah, you should totally go watch that.
So we're going to do sort of a high-level overview right now.
What we're going to talk about today is really not so much around the WebJobs SDK, which we kind of talked about the other day during Corey's show. We also have another show with Pranav where he kind of goes deeper into the SDK and some of the new stuff. I think he's done two or three shows on it. But what I'm really going to be talking about is the new tooling. And I actually worked with Marwan to get kind of the tooling stuff kind of ironed out because we work very closely with his team. Before I dive right into it, I do want to point out that there's this fantastic URL. It's kind of long, but I can show you where it is in the nav bar if you go to asp.net.
We'll put it in the show notes, so don't worry about that.
Okay, cool. Yeah. If you go right here down to Azure Web Jobs, recommended resources, we have tons and tons and tons of links and resources about the SDK. We have a link to a sample app that I've rewritten a couple of times. The latest incantation of it is actually using the Web Jobs SDK.
Now, before we go on, explain for the uninitiated exactly what a web job is. What are they? Who are they for? Okay. What do you do with them?
Because
not everybody watched the show.
That's unfortunate.
They will.
And I know that it's like that audience is really for the ASP.NET guy, for the web guy, and this audience is more for the Visual Studio crowd. So what I'll do is I'll try to kind of condense the description of what a web job is.
Okay.
Pretty much the guys that came up with it, Mike Stahl and some of the other architects over in Azure, their thinking was there's a lot of stuff you have to learn when you want to move your app to Azure. So there are a lot of ASP.NET guys out there who, for better or for worse, they like ASP.NET. They want everything to be ASP.NET-like. So we wanted to make it easier for them to onboard to Azure. So the idea behind a web job is you've got a website running up in Azure websites, and everything is hunky-dory, and you need to add some sort of background processing. Maybe you want to like queue messages up and then process them outside of the HTTP context or something like that. So it was basically a really easy way to give people that background processing functionality when they don't need like the massive scale potential of like worker roles.
Okay.
So if you just have like an XE that you want to run, and I've got a couple of kind of small examples today.
So just kind of like is it fair to say lightweight?
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Like Pranav talked about on the show the other day, the WebJobs service team is actually looking into ways of scaling it out. I don't have any thoughts on how that's going to happen, what the ETA for that's going to be. But the more you use it, the more evidence we'll have that we need to have that scale out functionality.
Yeah, and one of the things that I really like about the web jobs is I have a case where I use it in my service. So I have an RSS feed, and that RSS feed is built based on looking at other RSS feeds.
Right.
And the way I do it is I run some code in the cloud, and web jobs was really a great way for me. I don't need to scale.
Nice.
I need to run it once every so often.
Nice.
Run some code, add some stuff into SQL database, and everything else take care of itself. So nice. I think for those kind of scenarios, folks will really find it useful. Like, we need to just do something, right?
Right.
That's true.
And that's actually great. That's a perfect metaphor for how to use web jobs. Another one that Pranav has kind of partied on quite a bit is this concept of optimizing images. Mads and Syed, they actually worked on something that if you go to the Kudu portal, they've actually got a site extension in Kudu that does exactly that. Whenever you drop an image into your site, it'll actually optimize the image so that you save on bandwidth, you save on storage, et cetera, et cetera. Pranav has a sample out there called Fluffy Shuffy, I believe, that basically does image
processing. I love that name. That's a great name. Perfect.
Yeah, that's a great name.
Trademark, right?
By now. No, he actually got that from some of the samples we did on the Azure DPE team, because we had an old sample that used some of the worker and web role stuff called, what was it called? Fluffy Photos.
Right.
So when Pranav got a hold of it, he was like, I don't want to just take the name. I'm going to make it something different. So he came up with a really creative alternative. Yeah, he should have just taken the name.
Awesome,
I've actually talked about updating Fluffy Photos to use web jobs, but I kind of think Pranav has done that with the Fluffy Photos thing. So I'm not going to mess with that. But another good one I'm going to show you today. Another good example of what you could do, I'm going to show you today. And pretty much what I've got here is a simple little web app. And I go through this same app in the show with Corey. So if you want to know some of the details of it, feel free to go out there. I'll give you kind of a high level. What I've got here is a website, and in that website, it's an MVC site. What I'm doing in my site is I'm actually just saving, I'm taking information from the user, pretty much an email, and I'm persisting that to a storage queue. Now, the idea behind that is I don't want to wait to save the data into the cloud or into my database. I just want to throw it into a queue and the response to be quick, because my site's really popular, and I know I'm going to have a lot of people that want to sign up for the newsletter. So I want that to happen really quickly. So this code actually just drops the string into a queue, and this uses the tried and true storage SDK that you've probably seen on other shows, Cloud Cover and whatnot. This just uses storage SDK, nothing new with that. But if I go into this registration processor guy, and what I'll tell you is that this is just a pretty simple console application with nothing big in it. I'm gonna open that guy up, and what you'll see in here is that I have a pretty plain console app with a main method. And in this main method, I'm doing a run and block. So what's going to happen is this XE is going to run continuously as a web job. It's just going to sit there and spin. And what it's actually going to do, it's going to wait. And whenever a message lands in that queue, this method, save registration, is going to wake up. This queue trigger is going to wake up. It's going to pull the string out of the queue. Then it's going to persist it to a cloud table. And this is all using the web jobs SDK. So you can go to some of the other shows on the WebJobs SDK and learn a little bit more about the details of it. Or you can go to that website and learn more about the functionality within the SDK. But the idea behind it is, this is the only code that I would need to write if I was writing a web job to take a message off of a queue and save it into an Azure table. I didn't have to import the storage SDK and learn how to use it. And that was kind of the genesis of this being an ASP.NET centric thing, because this is a programming model that's familiar to ASP.NET guys.
Yeah.
So this just like lowers the barrier to entry.
Yeah, I would even say this is like the .NET guys, even lower common denominator. You don't even have to have like web specific training. You understand console apps. I mean, let's talk about that for like a second. Why a console app? Like what? I mean, I don't think when I looked at it first, I had that kind of brain freeze. I'm like, console app?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't have to just be a console app. I'll iterate over the things that I know are supported by web jobs. You can upload a Node.js thing that'll just spin. Mm-hmm. You could also, I don't know about PS1. I think PS1 is supported, but I know that you can also run batches and command scripts. Mm-hmm. So you can actually put all that stuff up into an executable and it'll just run.
Right.
The reason we're doing this from a console app perspective is to give people the ability to publish it really easy from within Studio. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm here today, and that's what I want to show you. So I'm going to right-click this guy first and foremost, and I'm just going to show you two demos because I have two different situations. I have this registration processor that is going to watch a queue and pick up messages off the queue and persist it into a table. That's great. So I have this website here, and I want to publish this website up to Azure. But when I do, I want this web job to be published with it, mm-hmm. okay? So that has to happen at the same time. Now I'm going to open up these properties folders right here because we're going to drop some new files in that I'm going to kind of highlight for you real quick to talk about the JSON editor that we mentioned. So I'm going to right-click my website, and I'm going to go over here to my Add menu, and I'm going to say I want to add an existing project as an Azure web job. And what you'll see in here is that I've got this drop-down menu, and I can actually select the email sender. Actually, that's been removed from my project. So I'll select the registration processor because that's the one that I've got in here. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to clean this name out. That's actually validated in the UI. What you'll see is that I have three different modes. I can do run continuously, which is what I'm going to do for this guy. I can do run on demand, which is I would actually go out to the portal and click run.
So demand is not programmatically demand? Well, you could use the APIs. Demand.
Right. I could use the API to run it. Yeah.
So it's not it's not that it's triggered necessarily from something in the code.
Right. It's not triggered from something within the code. What's triggered within the code is when you've got it running continuously and the trigger just wakes up the
got
method.
It. Okay.
And that's why if you drop something onto the queue. But I can also do run on a schedule. And when I do that, I can say I want it to be a recurring job. And I can set the start time and the end time.
Cool.
I can say when I want it to run. Mm-hmm. I can actually specify what I want my time zone to be and et cetera, et cetera. I want this one to be continuous. Oh, you have a question?
Do you have the ability to make it recurring like the second Friday of every month?
No.
Okay.
No. It's not that specific.
I got it.
But you could write code that they could filter on that. I mean, the code really is huge flexibility. And this is something that we can certainly take feedback on, right? If people want more things, let us know.
If you like that idea and you want something like that to be able to schedule it on intervals, bi-weekly, whatever, let us know and we'll see if we can work that into a future release. So I'll click OK, and what you're going to see is that it's going to install a NuGet package that we use just for publishing, not for actually for your code. You'll see that I'm dropping two JSON files. One of those is publish-settings.json, and that's actually in my registration processor web job. Now, what I'm going to do here is I want to open this up, and this is our fantastic new JSON editor that I really, really love. And you'll see that I've got a schema up here, and Mads has a site called schemastore.org, and we're putting all these schemas up in the schemastore.org so people have a nice way to get them. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and take out run mode, even though that's kind of an important guy that I'm going to need. I'm going to show you what we've done.
Very nice.
So we've already done that for you. So we made that really, really easy. This is the fantastic new JSON editor.
Nice. And this is because of that schema, right? That's the power. The schema lets our editor understand what are all the fields, what are all the enumerations in there.
And this works for all JSON files, not just web jobs.
Exactly. Yes. It works for all JSON files.
Yeah. We shipped this in the last update, and the beautiful thing is you get update 3. Yeah. You get update 3. You get all you get this feature as well. The fact that they're cumulative updates makes it so easy kind of to catch up. Even if you've fallen behind, like you did, sir, by not having your JSON editor.
Yeah, that would be painful. So you see that, and what you'll see over here in our web app is that I have another JSON file, and this really just has a list of the different CS projects that I'm going to be deploying up. Now, if I were to right-click this guy, I'm not going to do it right now, but if I were to right-click this guy and go through the publish experience, on the last step of the publish where you see the list of files, you're going to see EXEs, and those EXEs are actually the console app that's going to be deployed up to the job. So you'll see all that. Now, the other thing that you can do in here that's kind of my favorite part of this new feature set is I can right-click this actual console XE all by itself. I can right-click this guy and I can say right here, publish as Azure web job.
Cool.
And that's going to pop open. And then this one, I'd probably want this one to be a scheduled task because I want this, what this is going to do is it's going to wake up however often, once a day, once a week, iterate over all my newsletter email addresses and send everybody an email address or send everybody my marketing email. From Dimitri.
Yeah.
So I could actually set my schedule right here. I'll go ahead and do that. I'll say I want to run for 3 days. I want to run once a day. Oh, you'll see that we're validating that. So I'll take out that dot, hit OK right here. And now this thing is actually going to be set up as a schedule. And then we go right into the publish dialog. So I can actually go ahead and click publish right here, select my Azure website, and this will publish up that console XE as its own little XE as a web job all by itself without having to publish a WAP. So you get that just published up there, and now you have a running task.
Do people need to be worried about security, like as they publish these things? I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive. You get an XE going up to your website, right, which is a publicly addressable URL.
No, because what we're doing, I don't think I have any running out there. Pardon me, I ran here, so I'm burning up now. what we've got is, the way that works is when you publish up your exes, you don't need to worry about them getting executed by somebody randomly. Because what we do is we have a folder, you probably know it if you've done ASP.NET for a while, called app data, in which nothing can be executed. And that's actually where we drop,
I don't have any
running with it. But what we're doing is we actually put the exe into the app data /jobs/continuous or triggered folder. And that's where a folder lives with your exe and all the supported DLLs and config files. And that will actually run only when the API hits it. So the Kudu API actually hits it and it runs. So the way we wire that all up on Azure is that the Azure scheduler will actually ping the Kudu API. The Kudu API will fire the exe and the web job will run. So it's a good example of how we're kind of stacking all the different Azure components together to make something really easy to use like web jobs.
Cool.
So, but that's the tooling. I hope you like
very
it.
Very nice stuff.
It makes life pretty easy if what you have is a background process that you want to run up in your Azure website. If you're an Azure Websites person, it doesn't get any easier than this. You can party on this right away. This will be coming out with the RTM. I don't know if your show is going to come out before the RTM, but the show's already been on webcams. So you already know this is coming, so it's not a big deal. So
at this point, the RTM is already available.
Don't you feel the time warp that we're standing in right now?
The time warp.
There is a time warp here.
Oh, the RTM is already. I thought the RTM was available. Okay, you're right. You're right. Sorry about that.
And so now you've given away the secret that we tape these shows ahead of time.
Oh, these aren't live? I thought it was like next week already.
So the one other thing.
The jig is up.
One other thing I want people to know is that this tooling does not require an SDK, right? Just as long as you get update 3, you get this tooling.
That's exactly right.
That's
what, as we've discussed previously on this show, you should download the SDK.
Yeah, if you're an Azure developer,
you're gonna get other stuff.
You should get the SDK.
You're gonna get other stuff. Now, if you get the SDK, I think it all comes together. But anyway, so that's the deal.
Cool.
So I hope you like it. I hope you have fun with it. Use it. We want to hear if you have any other features that we could add to it. We're thinking about adding some stuff in the Server Explorer so you could actually run your web job from the Server Explorer or debug it. You know, so there's all kinds of options.
I vote for debugging. Debugging is always awesome.
We've actually already got the infrastructure for that. We just had to add the tooling.
Awesome.
So that shouldn't be too bad.
Let's get on it.
I'm all about it. Maybe update 7. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for having me on the show.
Thank you. Okay, so that's our show. So we've seen update 3. We did a review of all of the features, and then we saw some great demos on some of the things that were new since the RC. So if you want to see, again, the demos for things that were introduced in the release candidate, go and watch that show from a few weeks ago. We saw demos today of all the stuff that's new. So now you guys are completely up to speed on what's in update 3. It's available now. Go download it, install it. Great new tooling. Make good use of it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you very much, and see you next time.
We'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.